Chapter 17 Continued.
"No Quidditch practice,"
said Angelina in hollow tones when Harry, Ron and Hermione entered the common room after dinner that night.
"But I kept my temper," said Harry, horrified. "I didn't say anything to her, Angelina. I swear I—"
I know, said Angelina miserably.
"She just said she needed a bit of time to consider."
"Consider what?" said Ron angrily. "She's given the Slytherins permission. Why not us?" But Harry could imagine how much Umbridge was enjoying holding the threat of no Gryffindor Quidditch team over their heads, and could easily understand why she would not want to relinquish that weapon over them too soon.
"Well," said Hermione, "look on the bright side. At least now you'll have time to do Snape's essay."
"That's a bright side, is it?" snapped Harry, while Ron stared incredulously at Hermione.
"No Quidditch practice and extra potions."
Harry slumped down into a chair, dragged his potions essay reluctantly from his bag, and set to work. It was very hard to concentrate. Even though he knew Sirius was not due in the fire until much later, he could not help glancing into the flames every few minutes just in case. There was also an incredible amount of noise in the room. Fred and George appeared finally to have perfected one type of skiving snack box, which they were taking turns to demonstrate to a cheering and whooping crowd. First, Fred would take a bite out of the orange end of a chew, at which he would vomit spectacularly into a bucket they had placed in front of them. Then he would force down the purple end of the chew, at which the vomiting would immediately cease. Lee Jordan, who was assisting the demonstration, was lazily vanishing the vomit at regular intervals with the same vanishing spell Snape kept using on Harry's potions. What with the regular sounds of retching, cheering, and the sound of Fred and George taking advance orders from the crowd, Harry was finding it exceptionally difficult to focus on the correct method for strengthening solution. Hermione was not helping matters. The cheers and the sound of vomit hitting the bottom of Fred and George's bucket were punctuated by her loud and disapproving sniffs, which Harry found, if anything, more distracting.
"Just go and stop them, then,"
he said irritably, after crossing out the wrong weight of powdered griffin claw for the fourth time.
"I can't. They're not technically doing anything wrong,"
said Hermione through gritted teeth.
"They're quite within their rights to eat the foul things themselves, and I can't find a rule that says the other idiots aren't entitled to buy them, not unless they're proven to be dangerous in some way, and it doesn't look as though they are."
She, Harry and Ron watched George projectile vomit into the bucket, gulp down the rest of the chew, and straighten up, beaming with his arms wide, to protracted applause.
"You know, I don't get why Fred and George only got 3 OWLs each," said Harry, watching as Fred, George and Lee collected gold from the eager crowd. "They really know their stuff."
"Oh, they only know flashy stuff that's of no real use to anyone," said Hermione disparagingly.
"No real use," said Ron in a strained voice. "Hermione, they've made about 26 galleons already."
It was a long while before the crowd around the Weasley twins dispersed. Then Fred, Lee and George sat up counting their takings even longer, so it was well past midnight when Harry, Ron and Hermione finally had the common room to themselves. At long last, Fred had closed the doorway to the boys' dormitories behind him, rattling his box of galleons ostentatiously so that Hermione scowled. Harry, who was making very little progress with his potions essay, decided to give it up for the night. As he put his books away, Ron, who was dozing lightly in an armchair, gave a muffled grunt, awoke, and looked blearily into the fire.
"Sirius," he said.
Harry whipped round. Sirius's untidy dark head was sitting in the fire again.
"Hi," he said, grinning.
"Hi,"
chorused Harry, Ron and Hermione, all three kneeling down on the hearthrug. Crookshanks purred loudly and approached the fire, trying, despite the heat, to put his face close to Sirius's.
"How are things?" said Sirius.
"Not that good," said Harry, as Hermione pulled Crookshanks back to stop him singeing his whiskers.
The Ministry's forced through another decree, which means we're not allowed to have Quidditch teams.
Or secret defence against the dark arts groups, said Sirius.
There was a short pause.
How did you know about that? Harry demanded.
You want to choose your meeting places more carefully, said Sirius, grinning still more broadly. The Hog's Head, I ask you.
Well, it was better than the Three Broomsticks, said Hermione defensively. That's always packed with people.
Which means you'd have been harder to overhear, said Sirius.
You've got a lot to learn, Hermione.
Who overheard us? Harry demanded.
Mundungus, of course, said Sirius.
And when they all looked puzzled, he laughed.
He was the witch under the veil.
That was Mundungus, Harry said, stunned. What was he doing in the Hog's Head?
What do you think he was doing? Said Sirius impatiently. Keeping an eye on you, of course.
I'm still being followed? Asked Harry angrily.
Yeah, you are, said Sirius. And just as well, isn't it, if the first thing you're going to do on your weekend off is organise an illegal defence group?
But he looked neither angry nor worried. On the contrary, he was looking at Harry with distinct pride.
Why was Dung hiding from us? Asked Ron, sounding disappointed. We'd have liked to have seen him.
He was banned from the Hogshead 20 years ago, said Sirius, and that barman's got a long memory. We lost Moody's spare invisibility cloak when Sturgis was arrested, so Dung's been dressing as a witch a lot lately. Anyway, first of all, Ron, I've sworn to pass on a message from your mother.
Oh, yeah, said Ron, sounding apprehensive.
She says, on no account whatsoever are you to take part in an illegal, secret defence against the dark arts group. She says you'll be expelled for sure, and your future will be ruined. She says there will be plenty of time to learn how to defend yourself later, and that you are too young to be worrying about that right now. She also, Sirius's eyes turned to the other two, advises Harry and Hermione not to proceed with the group, though she accepts that she has no authority over either of them, and simply begs them to remember that she has their best interests at heart. She would have written all this to you, but if the owl had been intercepted, you'd all have been in real trouble, and she can't say it for herself, because she's on duty tonight.
On duty doing what? Said Ron quickly.
Never you mind. Just stuff for the order, said Sirius. So it's fallen to me to be the messenger, and make sure you tell her I passed it all on, because I don't think she trusts me to.
There was another pause, in which Crookshanks, mewing, attempted to paw Sirius's head, and Ron fiddled with a hole in the hearthrug.
So you want me to say I'm not going to take part in the defence group? He muttered, finally. Me? Certainly not, said Sirius, looking surprised. I think it's an excellent idea.
You do? Said Harry, his heart lifting.
Of course I do, said Sirius. Do you think your father and I would have lain down and taken orders from an old hag like Umbridge?
But last term all you did was tell me to be careful and not take risks. Last year all the evidence was that someone inside Hogwarts was trying to kill you, Harry, said Sirius impatiently.
This year we know there's someone outside Hogwarts who'd like to kill us all. So I think learning to defend yourselves properly is a very good idea.
And if we do get expelled? Hermione asked, a quizzical look on her face. Hermione, this whole thing was your idea, said Harry, staring at her. I know it was. I just wondered what Sirius thought, she said, shrugging.
Well, better expelled and able to defend yourselves than sitting safely in school without a clue, said Sirius.
"Hear, hear!" said Harry and Ron enthusiastically.
"So," said Sirius, "how are you organising this group?
Where are you meeting?"
"Well, that's a bit of a problem now," said Harry. "Don't know where we're going to be able to go."
"How about the Shrieking Shack?" suggested Sirius.
"Hey, that's an idea!" said Ron excitedly.
But Hermione made a sceptical noise, and all three of them looked at her, Sirius's head turning in the flames. Well, Sirius, it's just that there were only four of you meeting in the Shrieking Shack when you were at school, said Hermione, and all of you could transform into animals, and I suppose you could all have squeezed under a single invisibility cloak if you'd wanted to. But there are 28 of us, and none of us is an animagus, so we wouldn't need so much an invisibility cloak as an invisibility marquee.
Fair point, said Sirius, looking slightly crestfallen.
Well, I'm sure you'll come up with somewhere.
There used to be a pretty roomy secret passageway behind that big mirror on the fourth floor. You might have enough space to practice jinxes in there.
Fred and George told me it's blocked, said Harry, shaking his head. Caved in or something.
Oh, said Sirius.
Well, I'll have a think and get back to... He broke off. His face was suddenly tense, alarmed. He turned sideways, apparently looking into the solid brick wall of the fireplace.
Sirius? Said Harry anxiously.
But he had vanished. Harry gaped at the flames for a moment, then turned to look at Ron and Hermione.
Why did he...
Hermione gave a horrified gasp and leapt to her feet, still staring at the fire. A hand had appeared amongst the flames, groping as though to catch hold of something. A stubby, short-fingered hand, covered in ugly, old-fashioned rings. The three of them ran for it. At the door of the boys' dormitory, Harry looked back. Umbridge's hand was still making snatching movements amongst the flames, as though she knew exactly where Sirius's hair had been moments before, and was determined to seize it.